Blog Talk Radio.
People make the world go round.
This is Leslie Gist. I'd like to welcome Mr. Kevin Dunn of Puzzles for Us. Are you on the line?
Yes, I am. Hi, how are you doing, Leslie?
I'm great. I'm so happy to have you on tonight. Could you introduce yourself to the family?
Sure. My name is Kevin Dunn, and I'm the creator of Puzzles for Us, which is a series that celebrates the African-American and Hispanic experience through puzzles, more specifically word search, crosswords, Sudoku puzzles, and all kind of fun puzzle games.
Excellent. And how can someone visit your website?
They just go to www.puzzlesforus.com. That's forus.com.
Okay. And your cell number, your phone number, your office number?
Sure. They can reach us at 718-538-6102.
Okay, I think we have another person on the line that's going to ask a question and join in with us. Do you mind, Kevin?
No, not at all.
Okay, 734, you're on the line.
And a good evening to you both, as well as our listening audience. This is Arlie Gordon with the National Black Teen Empowerment Expo, Unity Design, and the Better Detroit Youth Movement. How is the family on this lovely evening?
Doing wonderful.
Yeah, I'm exceptional.
I know you are, Leslie. You don't have to. I'm how you were doing. I know what you are, but I don't know how you were doing. Well, firstly, I want to commend Kevin for understanding the value of edutainment in our young generation's society and as a very viable alternative to reaching and teaching our children.
Well, thank you for that. Yeah,
very welcome.
Yeah, the whole idea is to put the fun back into learning.
Exactly.
Because, you know, it sounds like you work with young folks, and so you know once you make it fun, they all into it.
That's right.
You know, and kids, you know, as well as adults, you know, we love games, we like puzzles, and, you know, anything that's hands-on,
mm-hmm.
they get into it.
It's interactive, exactly.
Right.
And
right.
We understand too. I think the other valuable benefit, if you will, of your products of purpose, if you will, is that it's very important for us to again instill in our children a greater sense of self-identity and self-esteem.
Right.
Having worked out of Detroit since 1986 and now back in Brooklyn, New York, we are in a city, Detroit is anyway, where 80% of the population is African-American.
Okay.
And by and large, unfortunately, these children are force-fed George Washington as opposed to uplifted by George Washington Carver.
Exactly.
And so, you know, I just read a very interesting study in Psychology Today or one of the psychology journals that talked about how black youth have a void relative to self-identity.
Right. And even, you mentioned George Washington Carver, and even in the regular school system, when they learn about George Washington Carver, it's very one-dimensional.
They hear
about him only in terms of what he did with the peanut. But they never hear about George Washington Carver, the man, that he had a wonderful sense of humor. I mean, he was hilarious. And a lot of times when you flesh out the personalities of people, it brings them more to life and makes them more real in the minds of especially the young folks. Like one of the things I do with the puzzle series, like, you know, I ask questions about Rosa Parks. I have stuff about Dr. King, but in a different kind of way. Like instead of saying, like, well, who was Dr. King? I may say, well, what was the name of his first girlfriend? And that definitely gets their attention. They said, girlfriend. Dr. King had a girlfriend. And then why is that important to the history? Because we come out of a context where we are very, you know, a communal people. You know, so, you know, why that becomes important? Because it's a possibility that his girlfriend may have been the one that said, well, look, if you don't get right, you know, then, you know. So a lot of times everything, you know, the whole thing is to put things in context and make it, to turn it into a subject where young people can identify with. And a lot of times meeting them where they're at. And then once I got their attention, then we could go into this whole dialogue about maybe how he transitioned from being Dr. King, the young man who may or may not have a girlfriend, to Dr. King that we know who eventually did the dream, you know, the March on Washington and all the other stuff that he was involved in. So,
right.
You know, those are the kind of things. Rosa Parks, instead of saying, well, you know, what does he do? You know, in one of the puzzles, I say, well, a question Rosa Parks may have asked. And the question may have been like, well, why do I got to sit at the back of the bus? You know what I mean? You know, so stuff like that that gets them to engage young folks in dialogue, that get them thinking outside the box, you know. And unfortunately,
I like that approach, Kevin. I think that's a wonderful approach. I think
it's
clever. And like you said, these are questions that they would probably ask Dr. King if they could, if he was alive.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, sometimes as educators, we try to overextend what we think students want to learn. But by making them more humanistic, I think the students, you know, feel that they're approachable.
Right,
definitely. Exactly. Yeah, I think that is very valuable because, again, we only scratch the surface when we do teach our children about our ancestors and about important figures in our history and heritage and culture. You know, that's why I'm a proponent, by and large, to African-centered schools and feel that, again, it's very important our children. Excuse me for a second.
Sure.
I apologize for that. My 19-month-old just grabbed my coffee cup and I didn't want her taking any coffee. I think it's very important that our children, again, understand that we were kings and queens and pyramid builders in another land. They need to understand and have a greater sense of self relative to where we come from, where they come from, and what we've overcome as a people in this country, and the achievements that we've contributed, not just here, but all over the world globally, because, I mean, we were the first mathematicians. We were the first scientists. A lot of the things that we built are never taught in school. And so, again, we have to start to close this gap and close this void in the minds of our children, understanding how important they are and how significant our contributions are to this planet.
And I agree wholeheartedly. And the other thing, too, is to show the continuity that as it was then, so it is now, that the same brilliance, the same genius that is evident, you know, all over the globe in terms of the African-American community is still present now. I mean, actually, today I was again putting together a new online quiz. I do a quiz, you know, to get people to visit the website. And there's this guy, he's an African doctor, physicist, and he come up with a unified field theory that actually goes even further than what Einstein did. And a few years ago, they were nominating him for the Nobel Peace Prize, and this is current history, you know. And then you mentioned about mathematics. There's a professor, I know his last name is Dr. Sabaz, and he's trained over, like, you know, maybe 40 to 50 PhD, you know, black PhDs in the field of mathematics, maybe over the last 20 years or so. And these are folks that we don't get to hear about, you know. And then, you know, Mark Dean, you know, the computer engineer that's responsible for, like, you know, allowing computers to talk to things, mm-hmm. like the printers, and, like, you know, all the young folks that are into the games and video games. You know, there was, you know, a black scientist had a hand in that as well. So a lot of times, you know, these are the pages, unfortunately, that's left out of the history books when our story is being told. And so the thing is, you know, to show that, you know, the genius existed back then, and it continues up until this day, because we're just such a creative people and such a talented artistic people, and there's, you know, we're also very diverse. So there's so much to who we are, you know. And
How many puzzles do you have in your series?
Well, right now there's three books. I have the latest book is a book called Puzzles for Us Junior, Cultural Edutainment for Young Minds. And that was created for children between the ages of 6 to 12. And there's two other books. The other book is called In Search of Yourself, Explorations into the Black Experience, which is a word search puzzle book, which I say is more than just a puzzle, because we have sections in the book where it's called Matters of Fact, where we give you the history behind a lot of puzzles, so you're not just finding words. You know. So like we have stuff about the Black Statue of Liberty, about black inventors, African medicine, you know.
Okay, well, now, when you say Black Statue of Liberty, what are you talking about?
Well, actually, there's a picture. The original model, the guy, the sculptor who designed the Statue of Liberty, the model that he used was an African. He was part French, part African, and it's in the Schomburg collection. And I actually have a picture in the puzzle book called In Search of Yourself. And, you know, so I go into that, and I talk a little bit about how he tried, when he presented to the United States and wanted to present that image, how it was rejected, you know, at that time. And so now we have the current day model. And there's a museum here in New York called the Museum of the City of New York, where at one time the Black Statue of Liberty was on display. But they got so much flack that, you know, they took down the exhibit. And actually a couple of years ago, I went by and asked one of the security guards, I said, what happened to the exhibit? They said, well, you know, one day he came in and was just gone.
Well, where is she?
Good
Anybody
question.
Anybody know where she is?
Good question.
Yeah, he disappeared from our landscape, and I'm very aware of what he's speaking about, because the original Statue of Liberty was supposed to, and I think even the one today still has shackles on its ankle, but it's very vaguely visible, if you will.
Right.
And that is supposed to express the black experience relative to having freed ourselves and having been quote unquote liberated through our experience in this country. And so again, these are things that the history books don't teach us. These are things that our children don't know. And again, we really need to look at products such as Kevin's that reconnect our children with our history, heritage, and culture.
Right. I agree.
Very well said. Excellent. Now, you mentioned a few other little-known facts in your book. What other areas?
Well, there's a bunch of stuff. One of the things, especially like in the new Puzzles for Us Junior book, you know, I talk about the Door of No Return. You know, that's an expression that, you know, a lot of people use, but very few people know, you know, the actual origin, you know, like during the enslavement process, you know, when we were being transported, you know, in wholesale numbers from, you know, the continent of Africa, you know, to different parts of the globe. That the Door of No Return, a lot of the forts that were established in, you know, some of the African countries, you know, the Door of No Return was actually the last point, you know, that we went through before being, you know, taken to the slave ships and, you know, being shipped to wherever. You know, I have that in the new book, because when Barack Obama, President Obama, visited, I believe it was Ghana, him and his family, you know, one of the places they visited was the Door of No Return. And so, you know, there's stuff like that. I have, you know, stuff about the African burial ground, a black rodeo, bulldogging, you know.
Well, we have time. You don't have to rush through each, you know, you don't have to rush and give us a list. You can expand on each one.
Okay, great, great. I have stuff about Madam C.J. Walker because, you
know.
Who
is Madam C.J. Walker?
Okay, she was a pioneer in the hair care industry and actually the first black female millionaire in this country.
She was a very successful entrepreneur.
Yes, and what she did, and the reason why her history and her story is so timely, because if you look around our communities now, we don't control the hair care industry. You know, other communities do. But at one time, you know, this was what she was known for. And during the early turn of the 19th century, around 1916, 1915, you know, prior to that, I mean, she employed over 20,000 people, and you know, at that time. And I mean, that's
20,000 people. She employed 20,000.
About 20,000. She had about 3,000 agents that were called her walkers, where they would go out. These were salespersons, people that were educated about hair care. I mean, she was a tremendous philanthropist. She gave so much back to communities. She gave to a lot of, you know, black organizations like the NAACP. She gave to the Tuskegee Institute. I mean, and she was just phenomenal in terms of, like, you know, what she did during her time.
Right.
And,
wow.
Yeah.
I got to ask you something, and I've asked this of the same question to maybe three or four of my guests. What do you think she would say about the movie that Chris Rock just released about black hair?
See, now I didn't see the movie, so I
didn't see it either. Did you see it?
No, I didn't see it either. I have a 20-month-old daughter, so I don't get to go to movies anymore.
Same here.
And as a supplement to that, most movies that are out today I don't necessarily want to see anyway. But what I would suggest to you is that Madam C.J. Walker was what we call today a social entrepreneur.
Definitely.
Not only did she uplift her people, but she also uplifted her community as well.
Right.
And and even these models are still very prevalent, especially in this day and age, where our greatest evil and our greatest need is our economic strength and to redevelop self-sufficiency among black people. Everything that we do, the shortcomings in our educational system, the fact that we can't support parents, or more often than not these days, a parent in the home as a community, all the money that we spend as a number one spending demographic group in this country, cultural group in this country, we are the smallest producer in this country.
Now, Gordon, I have to ask you this. You mentioned that she was a social entrepreneur, and that was the root of her success. Basically,
well, no,
right?
that was her vision, and that was her conviction.
Well, do you think that the social entrepreneur spirit within her, was that prior, or did that exist before her need to become wealthy? Do you think that her drive, was it inspired by her love of her people and her community and the lack of hair care products? Or do you think she was in search of becoming wealthy and making these statistics, breaking all kinds of barriers?
Which one do you think
came first?
I think that first she was a person of vision. What we have to understand is that if you want to do well for your family, if you want to do well for your community, if you want to do well for your people and planet, you have to have resources so that you can better others. So I think that while she was a very successful business person, her passion, her heart, and her vision made her more a person who wanted to give back, but understood that it required creating a model, if you will, that allowed her to do so. Because, as Kevin explained, she was able to employ members of her community. She was able to make a certain amount of profitability that she can donate to causes that she believed in. And so, you know, while I didn't know her personally, despite my age, I would suggest again that she was revolutionary in her thinking, and that she may have been, as a whole, cultures notwithstanding, the first social entrepreneur in the world. In that,
well, I have to beg to differ. I don't think she was revolutionary. I think, to the contrary, that she was very, very mainstream in the African American community.
What do you mean?
I think that there were hundreds of thousands of Madam C.J. Walkers, maybe not to the extent that she experienced wealth, but that line of thinking, that spirit of wanting to help your brothers and do unto others as you would have them do unto you, and lifting your brother up was something that we had to have coming out of slavery. I think that only recently have we lost that since, probably since desegregation. But prior to it, we had to survive, and I think we knew that if we didn't take care of one another, that it wasn't going to happen.
Right. Let me counter that by suggesting that the way that you go about building a business model to take care of people in a significant manner is what she may have been revolutionary in conceiving.
So you're talking about her business model.
Yes, her business model.
I'm speaking of, we talk about Black Wall Street and
We're talking about maybe the first MLM of her time or something of that type of business model, you know?
Was it common? Do you think, Kevin, that it was very common?
I think the point that you're making, Leslie, in terms about that spirit, you know, of just resourcefulness and entrepreneurship has always been alive within, you know, the Black community. I think, you know, what she did, you know, in terms of what the brother was saying, was to take her vision like to another step. Because just to give you a comparison, like now I get a lot of people say, wow, you know, when they see like the puzzle series, they say, wow, I was thinking about that. You know, I get that a lot. You know, I thought about doing that. You know, so a lot of times people have the idea, but they may not necessarily act upon it. And I think, you know, because of what she had been through, she struggled, she suffered, she went through a lot in her previous marriage, you know, so in other words, she paid her dues, but she didn't let that deter her.
Where I'm going is, it seems as though our current history books, which we haven't written,
right,
usually depict us as being the first and the only, the first Black, the only Black.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do that,
I got it.
Black History Month,
right,
when you do that, you are marginalizing everyone that came before Madam C.J. Walker and everyone who. So I don't take any pride in saying, oh, this was the first Black or she was the only Black, because there was a lot of people that she had to stand on their shoulders.
Definitely.
So I try to stray away from the first Black and the only. It's what Martin Luther King calls the drum major syndrome.
Right.
And we can't have that. So when we start teaching our students about Black history, I never, ever, and I have a little 3-year-old, use that phrase, the first, the only.
Right.
This is the one that the current history historians want to depict as the first and only, and it just marginalized us as a people.
Right.
Right.
And that's only in terms of
you had one entrepreneur, one Black entrepreneur. You have one Oprah.
Right.
Leslie,
just in terms of Madam C.J. Walker for a moment, only in terms of her being the first millionaire, why that becomes significant. But aside from being a hair care, I mean, you have literally thousands, because you know how, you know, big hair, doing someone's hair, that's part of our culture.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so definitely there was many other women out there, you know, doing that, doing hair. They may not have reached the same stature that she may have reached during that time period, but she wasn't the only one. So
right.
I agree with you on that point.
And the underlying story is that because of her, as you mentioned at the very beginning, that she was able to hire over 200, how many people?
About 20,000.
20,000
which is
people,
huge.
Which, right, and they all made an honest living.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And that's what it's all about, you know. Making an honest living. Now, if one person happens to make an extraordinary living, God bless her. But
that goes back to the point that, what's the brother's name again that's on the air?
Mr. Gordon.
That goes back to his point where he was making in terms of the social entrepreneurship, where she empowered her community because she created jobs, she created opportunities for other people to get on board. So it wasn't just about her. And so I think that's the point that was well taken, because ultimately, whatever we do, you know, it should be about, like, how do we empower one another? You know, how do we use our crafts, our talents, our skills, our abilities, our services to kind of, like, you know, to move our community forward? Because
and if you read the history books written by other people, you'll notice that they never use those phrases when they write about themselves.
Okay.
And I should correct it, too, Leslie. You bring up a very good point, is we only know what they tell us. And we only know what's been written in history books, but we understand that most history books, when it comes to black Americans and our experience in this country and even beyond, are usually lacking, are usually deficient, and, again, are not usually taught to our children. And
well,
so
I want to commend
right.
both of you for making sure that you are doing the Madam C.J. Walker work. You know, you are doing what she did back in her time.
Right, in that same spirit.
Leslie.
And you know what's really important, I think, is for us to start to, again, gain control of our own economics. Because if you think about it, I'm back in Brooklyn, New York from Detroit. And, you know, what amazes me is that you will have as many as a half dozen takeout Chinese restaurants surrounding, circling housing projects, which are predominantly housing African Americans. Did you know that we spend $40 million a day on Chinese takeout food in this country? $40 million
that's amazing.
A day.
That's
well,
amazing.
You know,
did you
had
know
this
that,
talk before. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Did you know that 97.5 cents of every black dollar is spent outside our own community?
Well, I'm not surprised. I have a book from the late 1890s, not a book, a pamphlet of a symposium where Booker T. Du Bois and numerous other dignitaries and scholars all got together to talk about the industries that blacks were in and how we were making so much progress.
Mm-hmm. But
and
you know what happened? Then the immigration laws changed, and they made sure that they had plenty of Europeans coming into this country so that we wouldn't gain too strong a foothold, if you will, economic stature in this country, and they start limiting the number of people, for instance, in the Caribbean who could come in or from Africa who could come into this country.
You're right, and that was part of the problem. It still is. Bill Gates is still exercising the same type of strategy against Americans, not just blacks, all Americans. He's been a proponent for allowing people from outside the country, I think it's called some sort of visa. He wants to extend the visas to more and more people. President Obama, when he passed the first bailout money for the banks, he told the Bank of America that they could no longer hire the foreign people, immigrants, that had MBAs, that he
mm-hmm.
asked for them to lay them back off or not to hire, freeze all of those hirees, and, you know, to use the people within this country.
Right.
And I also purchased a jacket from President Obama's website, and he very proudly states on the website these are union-made garments made in America. So we have a lot of people.
We do have a lot of work to do.
Right,
yeah.
that really go out, and they continue what they did to us first, and they just broaden their attack to all Americans. See, we already knew the game, and we've been a victim of it.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's been extended to the rest of the country, and they don't know what's happening, but we as African Americans who studied our past, we know that if they want to attack us, they're going to take the jobs. And
right. And see, and that's why, you know what, I really believe that we live in a paradigm shift, that
mm-hmm.
we're in a new time. Like sometimes what appear to be a negative is really a positive.
Yes.
That with unemployment, with all this, you know, just the economy being the way it is mm-hmm. actually a golden opportunity for us to become more resourceful, which we've always been, and a more self-reliant and self-sufficient to depend upon one each other, you know. So as opposed to looking for a job, now is the time to create our own jobs.
What do you
right.
say about that, Mr. Gordon, about this shift in the economy and reflecting history and...
Well, you know what's interesting? In this day and age in the economy, black people with MBAs can't find work. You know, there's still discrimination in this country, despite affirmative action, despite what you may read, or despite the black man in the White House. We still have an uphill battle and a very steep climb to be able to get the peak of what we should be and where we should be in this country. I would suggest to you that we need to begin to take matters into our own hearts and hands. I believe that the two most fundamental issues that need to be addressed, first and foremost, is economics and how we spend our money and how we save our money and how we use our money in our own communities, in our own neighborhoods, and among our own people. That's the first thing.
Two-part response to it, to what you just said.
Okay. And
now,
secondly,
when we talk about children and economy, now you could be as well off as you want to be. You know, you can have all the gold in Fort Knox. But if you're dead, what's the sense of having it as a people? Now, my concern is, and always has been since I was like 9 years old, is the welfare of our children. And I have never been so disheartened than I am now when I look at the news and read the newspaper and have to visit people and know people who have lost young souls to gun violence.
That's right.
So my biggest concern is not economy right now, but it's really the sense of trying to understand why we have all this violence.
Well, Leslie, let me suggest to you that a lot of that has to do with the economics, because if fathers could find jobs, there would be more men at home. There would be more men able to look their children in the eyes and say, you know what, I can provide for them. I can provide for him. I can provide for her. I can be a good father. I can be a good husband. Okay? When men can't find jobs, then they're going to resort to crime. They're going to sell drugs. They're going to wind up in jail. I would also suggest to you, too, that our country is more intent in turning our children into prisoners and prostitutes than productive and positive people.
Yeah, I agree.
Our educational system is failing too many of our babies. And so the only way that we're going to begin to uplift our children, which is what, as you know, Leslie, my work is all about, is twofold. We need to support parents, and again, unfortunately, 70% of the time we're talking about a parent as opposed to two parents, okay? And we need, as a community, we need to start taking matters into our own hearts and hands in terms of supporting more positive outcomes for more of our children.
Now, do you think,
that's what it comes down to.
Before the church became a business, do you think the church played a major role in the success that blacks experienced right after the emancipation
Churches are just like people. You got good churches, you got bad churches.
Yeah.
Church is only as good as its reverend minister and pastor. I've been working out of these places.
Historically speaking, do you think that it was a moral compass?
Yes. I think initially it was, but, you know, anything, religion and politics are nothing more more used to move the gains of man. Religion and politics are molded and used to move the gains of man.
So do you think that the church had anything to do with our morals?
Yes, of course.
And that our morals, there was a correlation between our morals and our success.
Our churches, again, you're talking Detroit, fifth largest gospel market in the country. A church can be a blessing to its community and its parishioners.
I'm not talking about the current church. We know, Reverend Wright exposed what the church is about today.
Yes, but you can truly have community churches. You can have churches that, again, bless the community, and you can have churches that exploit and burden the community.
Right, right.
Well, I'm not speaking about, the bad churches versus the good churches. I'm speaking about the correlation between when the church was our center and the success that blacks experienced as a result of having the church be the center of our communities. It was one time the only place we had to go.
Right. Well, I don't necessarily ascribe to too much history, Leslie, and I don't mean to offend or criticize those who are history buffs, because
right.
I think sometimes
you need everybody.
Again, I think that our history is so much manipulated and distorted that it's hard to get to the truth. And when you look at our history. Okay, I do think that, again, their churches can, for instance, in Detroit, you're talking about my Better Detroit Youth Movement. This is a nonprofit group, underfunded, but we're about 200 volunteers strong. We have about 50 youth on our advisory board, and we've done some very significant things in the city of Detroit, which is considered the poorest city in the country. We have offices in several high schools, for example. We hosted a scholarship fair where we awarded over $20 million to junior and senior high school students in September. And so we are still resourceful despite the lack of monies in Detroit, because these are people who are willing and committed to making a difference in our children's lives. Okay.
Now, how does your puzzles bring out the history and that type of unity, Kevin?
Well, one of the things I was just going to piggyback on what Mr. Gordon was saying, that essentially that, you know, what we do, we just merely provide vehicles through which we can serve, like, the highest good of the people, the folks in the community. And so one of the things that we're doing with the puzzle series is we're doing, like, literacy and culture workshops, which will be combining, you know, literacy, you know, the opportunity to focus on, you know, vocabulary, problem-solving skills, reading skills, you know, with youngsters, but incorporating culture, you know, things that's of value of interest that young folks can identify with. Like, one of the puzzles we have is about Lisa Price, the founder of Carol's Daughter, you know, going back just to the piece about entrepreneurship, you know. So, again, it's not just Madam C.J. Walker. There's folks out here that where she started her business in her home, in her kitchen, you know, with her own savings. You know, we have another puzzle, you know, it's about saving. If you take a penny and you double that penny every day, in 30 days, how many, you know, how much would you have? And, I mean, so, you know, so we're trying to give, you know, youngsters, like, real practical models of things that they could do in the here and now to improve the quality of their lives. And also, at the same time, model to them, not just, you know, preach to them, say, well, you should do this or you need to do that, but just demonstrate, because, you know, a lot of the folks that I work with have been out there too. A lot of folks I work with or been involved with are from the streets, have been incarcerated, you know, have that kind of background. But at some point, just like Malcolm, they were able to turn their lives around. And I think sometimes authenticity.
That happens when truth comes.
Right. So I think a lot of times what happens when you're authentic, especially with young folks, it resonates more with them and they respond more to that. So what we try to do with the puzzle series is just to be authentic. We bring in, like, you know, information to them in a real kind of a way. We talk about issues that impacts them and affect them daily. You know, where
now,
we're not,
what is your website?
www.puzzlesforus.com.
And your phone number?
It's 718-538-6102.
And full name?
It's Kevin I. Kim Dunn.
All right. Now, you were talking about, you know, you bring these puzzles to kids in a real life form, and it's effective. I met you in Harlem a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
At a conference for educators, and your table was busy the entire time. Could you tell us what type of people usually purchase your puzzles?
Well, all kinds of people. I mean, first of all, the first thing, you know, I could always tell, like, who's the educator, because they're drawn to the table right away. Good educators are always looking for new material to use with their students, you know. So usually I can spot the educators. Parents, usually the kids, they'll see the puzzles, they're drawn to the pictures, the images, and they say, ooh, you know, and they get excited. The only thing, sometimes the parents, they may cringe a little bit, you know, because a lot of parents, a lot of adults, you know, they're you know, price conscious and stuff like that. So we try to make the puzzles affordable, you know, where, you know, parents could really, you know, get them, because we know they're a great resource for the children. But aside from educators, aside from the young folks, we, you know, we have a wide cross section. We have, you know, last year we did an event at the Museum of Natural History, and we had, like, a lot of tourists that came through, you know, from over in Europe, and they came through, they saw the puzzles, and especially from France, they loved it. You know, they said France and England. They said, wow, there's nothing like this, you know, where we come from, you know. And they snatched the stuff up because, you know, people, they're hungry for information. And then in the information age, unfortunately, a lot of people are, you know, or starved, you know, for, like, really accurate knowledge, you know, or information that can get to them in a way that's engaging, where it's fun, where you're not trying to beat them in the head with information.
So, right, information, right, inundate them. Now, you mentioned that you had a quiz or some type of...
Right, every couple
on
of months.
Online?
Right, every few months what I do, actually I'm working on one now, is a Black History quiz, and it's for fun. Is it, you know, to test your knowledge, and I have stuff up there like who's the Tiger Woods of chess?
Oh, no.
There's a Black chess grandmaster, and I have questions about, like, stuff with Pigfoot Mary. We were talking again about entrepreneurship, how, like, in Harlem, you know, back in the turn of the century, you know, how with a stand where she sold pig feet, you know, she became a pig feet. You know, she came from the South with a couple of dollars. You know, she bought, like, a baby carriage. And she sold pig feet. And she became, like, you know, a force to be reckoned with in the Harlem community. Actually, she became, like, a real estate mogul, where she brought up a lot of property, You know, she didn't have no education, you know, in terms of, like, formal education. You know, she would be what some folks would say was illiterate in terms of she couldn't read or write. So, again, you know, in terms of our empowerment, I mean, reading is great, the ability, you know, but you don't necessarily need a college degree, you know, to follow to be successful. And I think that's one of the myths, you know, that we're being sold, you know, that somehow the only path to empowerment is, you know, maybe through a college degree. But there's other ways, other communities are doing it. They come here, they pool their resources, they have things like susus and stuff like that that they do, and they open up stores. So, it goes back to that piece about the financial and economic empowerment, you know, and then we can finance out, like, our own education where we can, like, you know, create our own schools, create our own institutions, so on and so forth. So I think, you know, with the young folks is, like, when we do presentation and workshops with them, you know, the thing that we suggest is find your way. You know, education, you know, is definitely important, but there's many forms of education. You know,
right. Now, do you have competitions with your puzzles, schools versus schools, league, any sort of thing nature, a quiz bowl?
Right. We do puzzle parties. Actually, we have a puzzle party that we're launching, a series that we're doing at a bookstore in Harlem called Sisters Uptown Bookstore that we'll be launching on December 16th.
Wow.
And the puzzle parties, right, we just create a fun learning environment where, you know, youngsters and their parents and adults could get together, and we do, like, a friendly competition,
okay.
You know.
Once, before you go any further,
sure.
Explain and announce what you just told us again, a little slower, what you just said about where it's going to be held and the date.
Okay. Yeah, we're on December 16th, we're launching what we're calling Literacy and Culture Puzzle Parties. And we're hosting them at a bookstore in Harlem called Sisters Uptown Bookstore, which is on 156th Street and Amsterdam Avenue. And anybody that's maybe interested in attending one of the parties, they can call the bookstore. I'll give out the number. It's 212-862-3680.
And the contact at Sisters?
It's Sister. Her name is Jennifer Wilson. She's the owner of Sisters Uptown Bookstore.
And your contact information again?
It's 718-538-6102.
Okay. Mr. Gordon, what do you think about this puzzle party?
I think it's a wonderful idea. One of the very valuable things that Kevin spoke to is that he is involving our youth in very important initiatives, i.e. reading, literacy, and what have you. And it makes a child want to be a part of those type of programs, especially because they're learning more about their people, and it fills that void of self-identity, and more importantly, it creates self-esteem in a lot of children. So I commend what he's doing. He and I, Kevin, you are in the New York area, obviously, correct?
Yeah, I'm based in the Bronx.
Okay, we're going to connect because you may not know, but I'm also the event director as well as the organizer of the first National Black Teen Empowerment Expo, which is scheduled to take place August 2010 in New York City.
Oh, wow.
So I would love for you to be a part of this initiative because it's really not about a weekend event in August. It's more about finding the resources in New York City who are doing the work with the youth or have a desire to uplift youth, connecting our youth with these resources at the expo and even up to the expo, but most importantly for us to creatively and strategically develop initiatives, programs, options, and opportunities that consistently and constructively uplift our youth every day to build brighter
tomorrow.
Now,
Mr. Gordon, only have 60 seconds left. I want you to please disseminate your information.
Okay. You can get more information about the expo at www.nasinnancy.org. That's NBTEE.org. You can also learn about more about my work at Unity Design. Unity is spelled UNITEEDESIGN.com. Speaks to my black youth education company. And as I'd like to share with your listening audience, as you both too, we've developed a program with a group out of D.C. called Historical Inspirations, where we have a program called I Can Do Anything. And what it does is it teaches our youth a number of occupations, professions, and fields based on the lives of famous African Americans. And
okay,
so we're
well,
talking
thank
all you.
Thanks, Mr. Gordon. And before we leave, I would like for Mr. Dunn to once again talk about your puzzle party.
Right. You know, the puzzle parties are, we call them literacy and culture puzzle parties, where we just create a fun learning environment, and the focus will be on, you know, just doing activities that are geared to strengthening the reading and vocabulary skills of youngsters, while at the same time, like, incorporating culture, stuff about their culture and their history. And we're gearing it towards, like, you know, middle school and elementary school students, and from primarily from African-American and Hispanic communities. And
well,
they'll kick off.
Well, make a great Christmas present, don't they?
Yes, they will. Christmas, Kwanzaa present, Black History Month, anytime gift, basically.
www.puzzlesforus.com.
Yes.
Your phone number?
It's 718-538-6102. And we also have puzzles online that, you know, folks can try out for free. So 718-538-6102.
Well, I enjoy talking to both of you. I'm so happy you joined us tonight, Mr. Gordon. You are an inspiration, and the work that you do and the passion you have is showing. And Kevin Dunn, you know, you're doing a great thing with your puzzles for us. I foresee your company really, really expanding beyond what we can imagine.
Well, thank
you. I'm so proud to have you on my show. Have you done any other Blog Talk Radio shows?
I think yours is the first.
Well, I'm very, very pleased to know that I had you on first, and look forward to having some phone calls. I'm pretty sure others will be interested in having you on. So good luck, and I'll talk to you guys soon.
Okay, thank you so much, Leslie. And
right.
Mr. Gordon, I guess we'll talk at some point.
Yes, you will. I'll give you his information. And we'll talk again. Have a good night, Mr. Dunn.
Okay, you too. I'll talk to you later. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.